Dynasty Radio, 1382.
Ah, Uncle Jaseneb, life, liberty, prosperity, yet another decree stolen from you and me. The ancestors of the Nile Valley left us other messages too, like, let food be your medicine, and let your medicine be food.
Why is food and drugs under the same administration? They putting drugs in the food to keep money accumulating now. They like to call it additives and preservatives, slowly killing everybody that purchases it. Can you pronounce what's on the back of the label? Then that shit we need to keep off our dinner table now. The food is what's fueling these diseases, paying rich doctors all these medical fees, but they never cure you, they just keep you in need, cut you open for surgery and let your pockets bleed. See, we got away from what we used to eat. We forgot we were kidnapped and forced to eat meat. We ate from the earth, so we communicated with it. We cut the conversation, now check the situation. See, blacks the leaders in heart disease, cancer. We give them money like pills is the answer. Damn, I'd be wrong if I didn't pass the info. Hormones in the food got you thinking like a nympho. Wonder why all these young girls so thick, like a baseball player. Steroids is it. They got it in the vegetables, the fruit, the meat, and all the fast food they be selling in the street. It's a war going on, and our diet must reflect it. We all got the power, we just gotta direct it. Neglect it, never. Refer to the metal nature that them whole tests the father of medicine.
Peace, everyone. This is Dr. Phoebe Adiro, and welcome to another fabulous episode, or just another show of Food for Medicine. I am one half of your hosting today. My sister, Kenya Jones, is usually here with me, but she's not today, so I'm going to hold it down for her by my lonesome today. And for those of you who are new to the Dynasty family, again, welcome. You're listening to Food for Medicine, and we're going to get into another dynamic topic for you today. So I'm just going to go through some housekeeping like usual. Get your pens and your pads ready, because even though we got to a late start today, and I apologize for that, I still have plenty of information to give you, and I have to make up for those 15 minutes that were lost. Again, we were having some little technical difficulties with Blog Talk, so other than that, we're going to get right to it, and I'm going to get right to it. So let me just get through this real quick, y'all, and we're going to get into the information. So for those of you who are new and don't know who I am, again, my name is Dr. Afivia Diro. I'm a naturopathic physician. I use holistic therapies for healing the body, those things that complement and that assist the body in restoring its self-healing power, things like acupuncture, hydrotherapy, and my passion is using food as medicine, nutrition, and herbs. And we're going to hear a lot about those things today. And as always, we like to set the intention for the show. We always have a purpose when moving forward with Food for Medicine and all the things we do here at Dynasty. And we set that intention by letting you know our premise of the show. And the premise of Food for Medicine is to enlighten African people on how to use food, not just as an alternative to medicine, but also to use food as it was intended by our ancestors. This show is designed to teach you how to eat to live instead of living to eat. Ashe, ashe, asheo. All right. So also, because we are part of a network, I want to encourage everyone to go to www.dynastynetwork.net to get more information about other shows that we have, even shows that are no longer on the air with us, but we have archives of that were great. I used to do another show. Some of my sisters that were on here did other shows, so that they still have great information. You can go back into the archives and look at those. But as far as the shows that are still on, you can always check in on dynastynetwork.net to see when those shows will be airing, and also to check back in to find shows that you missed that you want to listen to. You can also go to dynastynetwork.net if you want to leave us any emails for comments, concerns, show ideas, topics on shows that are already existing that you want to hear. And don't forget that we also have Facebook pages for Dynasty Network and for the Food for Medicine show. Please go on Facebook and like both of those and show your love and support for us if you're loving what we do. Also, remember that this is a live call-in show, so if you want to call in, you can listen to it online, but if you want to call in on your cell phone, just call this number, 646 646- 716-7572, and you can just sit and listen if that's all you would like. But if you want to speak to me, or if you want to ask a question or state a comment, then you can press the number 1, and then that will raise your hand, and then we'll bring your mic up after we get to you in whatever order that you call in, okay? So that's all the housekeeping, y'all. I'm going to get right into it because we are starting late. Had to make up for those 15 minutes. So today's topic that I've chosen today is flowers for food therapy. I love flowers. And I don't know if many people, especially if you haven't been exposed to a lot of holistic or natural medicine, you maybe didn't think about using flowers for medicine, let alone for food therapy as well. But they're excellent. Flowers carry such a great energy with them. They are very high vibration herb or food for us to eat. So I think that it's very beneficial for us to know where they appear in our diets, in our, you know, common areas in our diet. And we don't even know sometimes that we're eating flowers. But I want to bring that to your attention today, and we're going to talk about different foods that are actually flowers, some that you may not have known are flowers, some that you definitely know are flowers, and how you can incorporate and use them and what benefits they bring to our bodies when we consume them. So let's get right into that. And what inspired me to do that was just because I like flowers. We're at the time in, at least where I am in Arizona, where a lot of flowers are blooming because the weather is in a transition period. It's going from being hot as fire to going into the fall season. And now is the time when a lot of flowers that were not able to sell in the summer heat, they're kind of coming back. So this is almost like it's kind of like a little spring. It's not really spring, but in this part of the country, you know, some things are regenerating. So just seeing the flowers inspired me to do this show. But let's get right into our list, the list that I have. So the first item, herb, food, that I have on the list for us today is dandelion. And I wanted to start with that because that's pretty common. That's something that most people know, have a flower, and you are familiar with the flower. A lot of people think of dandelion tea and using the root, but the flower is also a very nutritious part of the plant as well. You can use the whole dandelion plant, but the flower, it has its own nutritional and medicinal profile that we're going to discuss. So while many people think of dandelion as a pesky weed, it's actually chock full of vitamins and minerals. For example, beta-carotene or different beta-carotenoids are within the flower, and this is particularly abundant because, as you can see, the yellow pigment of the flower tells us that it contains those antioxidant pigments. B vitamins are also very abundant in dandelion flower as well. The whole plant is full of B vitamins, but dandelion flowers also have a great deal of B vitamins. And remember, we use our B vitamins in order to help to metabolize carbohydrates. They help with keeping the nervous system healthy. So B vitamins are abundant here. Dandelion is also full of vitamin C, vitamin D, as well as different minerals such as iron, potassium, and zinc. Now, while the root is used for mainly liver conditions, the leaves and flowers have been used traditionally as a tea for kidney disease, for swellings and edema, skin eruptions, heartburn, and upset stomach. In traditional Chinese medicine, dandelion has been used to treat stomach problems, appendicitis, and breast conditions, especially if the breasts are swollen, such as in conditions like inflammation of the breast, if there's a backup of the milk flow in a nursing woman. Dandelion teas and just consuming of the dandelion flower and the leaves have been shown to help with that traditionally. And there also have been remedies of using the upper part of the plant, dandelion leaves and the flowers, for fever, for boils, eye problems, for blood sugar imbalances, and diarrhea. So there are many uses for the dandelion flower, and just using it, things that you eat, you know, you can reap those benefits, especially if you have some of those issues going on. Dandelions are very effective for cleaning the blood and also helping with blood deficiency issues such as anemia. for example, in Native American culture, it has been used as a tonic, like just like a overall tonic. And usually herbs that tonic are also nutritive, which means they contain a lot of those nutrients that we're missing, including minerals, things like iron. So if you're somebody who is suffering from an anemia, especially an iron deficiency anemia, then dandelion would be a great herb for you to add to your food. Because the flowers are particularly tender, especially if you get a younger plant, you can add them to salads, you can put them in wraps, you can chop them up and put it in soups. You can pretty much use the greens, the leaves, and the flowers all together into anything that you would use leafy greens for. So definitely add dandelion to your dishes to reap the benefits of that. And remember, the dandelion is a bitter herb. It's not crazy bitter like aloe vera or something like that, but it does have a bitter quality. So just know that you don't want to make unless you like the bitterness of dandelion. I actually like dandelion greens, but I just wanted to caution you of that just in case, so you don't ruin the taste of a dish because you're not knowing that the dandelion is bitter. But you should always taste things before you add them to dishes so that you can be familiar with the flavor. So just make sure you do that. The next herb food flower that I have on here is lavender. And lavender is another very common flower that we're used to and familiar with. Many people appreciate lavender for its fragrance. However, this herb has also been used as a remedy for a range of ailments, from insomnia and anxiety to depression and fatigue. And a lot of research has been done that has confirmed that lavender produces a slight calming, soothing, and even sedative effects when the scent is inhaled. But these effects can also be complemented by consuming the lavender flower in food, in which case you're getting the benefits of the aromatherapy, but the aroma from lavender comes from its essential oil. So if you're eating the flower, then you're consuming and getting even more of those essential oils in their whole form into your body. Scientific evidence suggests that lavender may slow the activity of the nervous system, which is why it helps improve your sleep quality, why it helps with promoting relaxation. It even lifts the mood in people suffering from sleep disorders and depression. So lavender, in this case, can be used as like a seasoning that can over time help with regulating some of these sleep and nervous disorders. Consistent use of lavender as a spice or a tea in food can also be used to soothe headaches, nervous disorders, exhaustion, a lot of fatigue. Even though lavender is calming, fatigue can sometimes be associated with this kind of unnerved feeling, like this, even though you're dog tired, you can't rest, like you're just kind of just up and just wired, but you know your body is weary. Lavender is really good for helping with that kind of constitution. Lavender is also being studied for its antibacterial, antifungal, and antiviral properties. Because of this, lavender is a great herb to add in combination with other antimicrobial herbs and foods to help the body heal from especially skin ailments that are caused by fungal infections. I've seen people really heal up very, very well from things like rashes caused by candida overgrowth, as well as ringworm, which are all fungal infections. It helps with wound healing from the inside out because lavender helps to support the immune system, and because the essential oils in lavender are anti-inflammatory, antioxidants, so it supports the skin and collagen. And collagen production and making sure that the wound is not it's healing properly and make sure that there's no inflammation, there's no excess infection and all of that is keeping the wound from healing. Also, the essential oils, like I mentioned, are antioxidant and anti-inflammatory, so it helps with pain. It can help with easing joint stiffness, achiness. It can help with allergies and digestive upset, which can at its root be a inflammation of the digestive tract. Also, things like eczema can also be soothed by consuming lavender as well. So you can add lavender to soups. You can use it to scent things like quinoa, brown rice. You can use it in pilafs to make kind of a light floral scent to pilafs. You can use it in baked goods. You can make homemade lemonade with it, or, of course, a tea. which is what most people use it as. And you can put it in sauces. Lavender just gives kind of a nice accent to any kind of dish that you're using for the most part, especially dishes where you're using other aromatic herbs like mint, like thyme and basil and oregano, rosemary. All those kind of things are complementary to lavender. All right, so the next flower food that I have on my list is calendula. Now, the flower petals of the calendula plant, or pot marigold, as it's also called, have been used for medicinal purposes since at least the 12th century. Calendula has high amounts of flavonoids in it, which are plant-based antioxidants that protect cells from being damaged by unstable free radicals, like I mentioned in other shows. Calendula has been shown to be a superior herb when it comes to fighting inflammation, as well as viral and bacterial infections. Traditionally, you can see calendula being used as a stomach, which means that it helps with soothing the stomach and any kind of upset, sour, digestive complaint, indigestion, things of that nature. Also, it's been used traditionally for ulcers, as well as relieving things like menstrual cramps, which is inflammatory at its root cause. You can also use calendula for healing wounds. Calendula actually helps wounds heal faster, and this is thought to be because it helps with increasing blood flow and oxygen to the affected area, and all of that together helps the body to grow new tissue where it has been damaged much more effectively. So the same mechanism goes with the ulcers as well, because the ulcer is a damaging of the tissue internally in the stomach. So if you increase oxygen and blood flow to that area, you facilitate the immune system getting to that area and repairing it that much more effectively. So that's why it's so great with wound healing. Anything that calendula touches can help with the healing of that. It also is used to improve skin hydration and firmness. So it's known for helping to maintain that youthful, glowy appearance to the skin that can diminish with aging or with a bad diet or environmental damage to the skin. So because of its anti-inflammatory effect in the body and its affinity for the skin, calendula has also been shown to help prevent dermatitis, which is an inflammation of the skin, and other conditions of skin inflammation. Even people that have been subjected to radiation therapy, such as in breast cancer and other radiation therapy where the radiation is being put on the skin and is known for causing dermatitis and different types of skin inflammation, calendula has also been used in studies for those types of skin rashes, and it has been shown to help with the healing of those as well. So if you're somebody that's dealing with that kind of skin issue because of radiation therapy or some other type of like chemotherapy that's causing your skin to become damaged, you can also use calendula internally. You can eat it so that the immune system is better equipped to help your skin repair. I'm trying to see if there's anything else I want to say about calendula. Oh, of course, the petals of calendula, which are bright yellow petals, are the most effective when you mix them with fat. So, like I mentioned, beta carotenoids are in those petals that make them yellow. They are a fat-soluble nutrient. So if you want to consume calendula and get the most out of it, then it would behoove you to put them in something that you're adding oil to or that you're going to be eating, like with avocado or, you know, anything, nuts, seeds, whatever that may be. Calendula is actually the greatest source of beta-carotenoid rutin, which is found abundantly in our eyes, especially in the macula of our eyes. And it's necessary to have rutin in the diet in order to maintain and support healthy vision. And it helps to prevent degeneration of our vision when it's in abundance in our diet. So when using calendula, you can put the dried or fresh flowers in your soups and your stews. You can use the fresh flowers in salads. You can use the fresh or dry flowers in any of those applications. You can also use the dry flowers to make a tea. And it can be used as an accent in pretty much anything, just to add not only an accent, but an extra boost of nutrition as well. So calendula, another herb food that a lot of people don't necessarily know they can utilize so much and that it does so much. The next flower food that I have to talk about is artichoke. And some people know artichoke as a flower and other people don't. Most people in this country know artichoke as a vegetable, but in fact, it is classified as a flower botanically. And it's in the same family as, like, thistle. So think about any kind of thistle, like milk thistle, blessed thistle. And this class or this family of plants has, like, this purple kind of prickly. It has a very unique-looking flower. And it's a very, very useful flower food that we can eat. The rest of the world has known artichoke to be a medicine as well for centuries. Artichoke has been used traditionally as a specific liver and gallbladder tonic. For example, in tropical medicine systems, the leaves of artichoke are made into teas or into juices and are used for liver and gallbladder problems. It's also been used traditionally for diabetes, for high cholesterol, hypertension, anemia, diarrhea, and elimination in general. It's been used for fevers, for ulcers, and for helping to treat gout. The science behind artichoke is that it is used to increase bile production in the liver. And it also increases the flow of bile from the gallbladder. And to increase the contractive, it helps you increase the contractive power of the bile duct. So remember that your gallbladder is that little sac that's on your liver that holds the bile. And when you eat food, it actually squeezes that bile out into the small intestine so that it can help digesting fats and, you know, helping the body to better utilize the fat that are in our food. So when people have their gallbladders removed or if they have a gallbladder condition that causes underfunctioning of the gallbladder, they are not able to handle rich fatty meals as well as others who do have a well-functioning gallbladder. Now, these bile actions that artichoke has on the liver and gallbladder, what they do is they are of great benefit to the digestive system, the gallbladder and the liver, and are useful in people who have conditions that are showing that these two organs are not functioning well. Artichoke is known to be used to help with the liver and gallbladder mobilizing fatty stores. So if a person has a hypofunctioning liver, they'll have problem with mobilizing and metabolizing fat, and they'll have problems with removing fat, excess fats from the blood, and detoxifying it. So when you consume something like artichoke, it helps with detoxifying the liver, it helps with detoxifying the gallbladder, and it's used as a natural aid to lower cholesterol because, again, cholesterol is made in your liver, so when your liver is hypofunctioning, one of the things that can happen is that your cholesterol can become higher. Or if you just have high cholesterol in general, you need to support the liver so that it can get more of that cholesterol out of the body. So artichoke is something that can be added to the diet to assist the liver and gallbladder in metabolizing our fats from the diet and our cholesterol that it makes more effectively. So artichoke can be consumed in a variety of ways. It can be made into a tea, like I said, or juice, as it traditionally is. It can be put into salads. It can be grilled, steamed, stuffed with a veggie stuffing and baked. It can be added to soups or stir fries, you name it. Incorporate artichoke into your diet, especially if you have one of those pre-existing conditions that I mentioned of the gallbladder or the liver. It's very nourishing to those organs. Now, one of my favorite flower foods is sunflower. That's the next one we have up here. Sunflowers have an abundant health medicinal profile. And when you consume them, you can really ensure, the same way you can ensure that your health will be as abundant and as bright as the sun if you eat sunflowers. You can reap the health benefits of sunflowers in three different ways. You can, for one, consume the seeds, which most people, that's their way of consuming sunflower. You can also consume the sunflower seed oil. And then you can also actually eat the whole flower. If a lot of people probably don't know that you can eat the whole flower, but I'm going to talk about that towards the end of this little explanation, and I'll tell you ways to prepare it. So those are the three ways that you can consume sunflower. So sunflower seeds, with their fiber and amino acid content, they can really help improve your digestion. And hold on, let me bring this other one up. So sunflower seeds, with their fiber, they can improve your digestion. And the oils that are in sunflower seeds, like I mentioned before in other shows, your brain, like when you eat fats, your brain's going to get first dibs on a lot of the fats that we eat, because most of the brain is made up of fat. So those oils, especially those omega-3 oils, are going to be utilized by the brain. So when you consume oils like those in sunflower seeds, you're going to be nourishing the brain and supporting the nervous system as a whole. The oil in sunflower seeds is also very supportive to the cardiovascular system. It's not full of cholesterol. It's not going to have an abundance of those oils that you don't want that can be seen in animal proteins, such as the omega-6 oils. There are some, because there's omega-6 oils in everything, but as far as the ratio of what you need in the diet, you're not going to get as much of those omega-6 oils in sunflower seeds as you would eating, say, an animal protein. So it's better on the cardiovascular system. It's more of a healthy oil to consume. All of the minerals that sunflower seeds have in them is something else that we should consider when we are looking at their nutrition profile. Sunflower seeds bring a rich array of minerals into our diet, such as magnesium, potassium, selenium, zinc, and iron are very abundant, and they're all essential to the biological functions of the cardiovascular system, nervous system. All of the different systems in your body are going to utilize those minerals, and which is why adding sunflower seeds into your diet can really be a great nutritive source for you and your family. Sunflower seed oil is another vehicle that can afford you with the same nutrient profile as the seeds, but I always have to say that it's better to eat the whole food in it, you know, intact, than it is to consume this extract of it. So the sunflower seed oil has been extracted from the sunflower seeds. And while sunflower seed oil is more healthy than, say, like a canola oil or like a generic vegetable oil or eating, you know, animal fat, sunflower seed oil, or the sunflower seed is going to contain more of the nutrients than the extracted oil. So, you know, you can use sunflower oil, especially because it has a higher heat content. If you're somebody that cooks their food, you can use it instead of like an olive oil, which is actually not so great to cook with because it's so fragile, and it actually turns rancid when you cook it. We actually should not be cooking with olive oil at all. If you're going to cook, you should use like a coconut oil, a palm oil, or something like a sesame seed oil or sunflower oil, which has a higher heat or smoke point, so it won't go rancid when you cook with it. But, yes, sunflower oil is way better than a lot of those other trans fats that are on the market. But if you want to get optimal nutrition, I say just go ahead and eat the seed. Also, the other thing about the sunflower seed oil, it is a great skin moisture retainer. So if you are eating the seeds or using the oil in salads or for cooking and things like that, it also helps with keeping the skin hydrated. So if you're somebody that suffers from dry skin or, you know, you have a condition where you're trying to rehydrate the skin, you just want to keep your skin nice and glowy and plump, sunflower seeds and the oil will help with maintaining that. The beautiful sunflower plant itself, with its bright yellow petals, is a great, great treat for the eyes because, again, like our calendula friend, it contains those antioxidant beta carotenoids, which are the same beta carotenoids that are in something like carrots, but you don't have to eat carrots to get beta carotenoids. You can eat sunflowers or you can eat, you know, calendula and other foods that have that bright yellow or orange pigment. The whole flower, the sunflower itself, especially when it's young and tender in the bud stage. Really, you want to get the sunflower when it's in the bud stage because then it's tender. You can eat that whole flower. It can be chopped into salads. It can be steamed or baked. It actually tastes like an artichoke if you've never tasted one before. It tastes kind of like an artichoke. and you can use it in place of artichoke, but it doesn't have the same nutrient profile. So if you want to eat artichoke, but I'm just trying to tell you what it tastes like. You can also put it in soups and stews and other dishes. It's great. And the sunflower greens that are on that flour can also be consumed too, and they are very mineral rich. Just like any green, they're packed with iron and magnesium, selenium, magnesium, potassium, zinc, just to name a few minerals, but it's chock full of great stuff. And then you can also take the seeds, going back to the seeds here, you can sprout them, and you can sprout them enough to where they start getting their little tails on them, but then you can sprout them even more to where they start getting the green leaves on it, and you can eat that as well. Or you can just grow your own sunflowers. You can grow them up all the way up until they become little buds, and you can harvest your own sunflower seed buds. So, and then that way you can put the sprout in, or the microgreens, however much you sprout them, into sandwiches, salads, put them in wraps, you can put it in soups. They're awesome. And sunflower seed sprouts are just a great superfood. You're going to get all of the benefits of the seed, like I mentioned, and the flour and the greens, but all packed into a little package, which is the sprout. And like I've mentioned in other shows, I did a whole show on sprouts, I believe, and they are just more nutritious in their sprout form because they have all the potential of this big plant in this little package. So you're going to get all of that high vibratory nutrition and energy from that sprout, and it's going to be wonderful. So definitely add sunflower and sprouts and seeds and greens to your diet for optimal nutrition. Definitely do that. All right, so this is another one of my favorite flowers that a lot of people don't know is a flower, but it is broccoli. I bet you didn't know broccoli was a flower. If you did, great. If you didn't, now you know. So, and I also want to just say again that this is a live call-in show. So if you'd like to call in and ask a question or leave a comment, then call 646-716-7572, and then you can press number 1 to raise your hand and we'll get to you. But if not, then just sit back and relax and continue to listen to me talk about food or flower foods, okay? All right, so the next flower we have is broccoli. Love broccoli, y'all. I love it. Broccoli is one of my favorite vegetables to eat. Got to take a sip of water on that one. All right, got to stay hydrated in Arizona. It's crazy, y'all. It's hot. Still hot. So your parents knew what they were talking about, basically. They knew what was up when they told you to eat your broccoli, when they didn't let you get up unless you finished your broccoli on your plate. They knew what was up. And this vegetable, the reason that they probably did that because they knew that this vegetable was a powerhouse of nutrients. And it's just where to begin with broccoli. So let's start with the digestive system and the cardiovascular system. It's been known to be very beneficial and very nourishing to both the digestive and cardiovascular system. Even the immune system is supported by the consumption of broccoli, especially when it comes to regulating inflammation and to help preventing cancer. And that's something we definitely need in this country, in this day and age, and all over the world, right? Broccoli has an impressive nutritional profile, if I do say so myself. I mean, it's just, if it was an application for a college, it would get in first, right? It is high in fiber, both soluble and insoluble. It's very high in vitamin C. It's rich in potassium and iron and manganese, all these different minerals and trace minerals, rich in B vitamins, especially B6. And it's very rich in beta-carotenoids. Even though it's green, it still has beta-carotenoids in it. And chlorophyll, of course, because it's green. And remember, chlorophyll is just oxygenating, it's alkalinizing, it's detoxifying, it helps with all of that. So broccoli is just, it's just a kind of a one-stop shop. If you're going to get the most bang for your buck, if you're somebody that wants to know how to do that, broccoli is one of those flowers that are food that we use that you can do that with. Now, broccoli is also packed with phytochemicals and antioxidants, which are attributed to broccoli's ability to prevent cell aging and degenerative diseases. Phytochemicals in broccoli are good for the immune system as well, and they include the glucobrassicin, all the carotenoids that are in in broccoli as well, such as zeaxanthin is an abundant beta-carotenoid that's in broccoli, as well as beta-carotene. Also, camphorol is another highly studied beta-carotenoid that is in broccoli, or I'm sorry, a flavonoid that is in broccoli that's highly studied. All of these are highly antioxidant compounds, all of those. And they scavenge for all those free radicals, and especially the glucobrassicin. It in particular is a sulfur compound, and it assists the body in detoxification. All of this helps to prevent the accumulation of waste. All of it helps with preventing the accumulation of toxins in the body. And this equals out to you not getting degenerative diseases and preventing things like cancer. Because all of those kinds of diseases that we're talking about, they all have at their root an accumulation of waste and toxins. So if you want to prevent those things, even if you have something already, you can stop their progression. And sometimes people even are able to reverse their condition because you need to just help the body to get all that crap out, get all those toxins and that waste out. Your body should not be a garbage bin. It should not be this heap of just things that the body is trying to get rid of. So broccoli helps with moving that stuff out. It helps the body kick into gear its elimination system so that you don't develop those type of conditions. Broccoli can also help with the cardiovascular system by helping lower cholesterol. Because the soluble fiber in this vegetable binds with the cholesterol in the blood, it makes it easier for it to excrete. You know, it makes it easier for the body to kind of collect it all and then eliminate it when we have bowel movements. And consequently, when we are able to take that excess cholesterol out of the blood and then, you know, have it leave through our bowel movements, of course the cholesterol levels in our blood go down. In addition to that, broccoli can aid the heart by helping to keep blood vessels strong. The sulforaphane, which is another phytochemical in broccoli, is also an anti-inflammatory compound, and it may be able to prevent or reverse damage to blood vessels and the linings of blood vessels that are caused by high blood pressure and chronic high blood sugar. So if you're somebody that is already having cardiovascular issues, if you know that your vasculature is compromised, broccoli would be an excellent, excellent food to add to your diet to help assisting the body in healing up those things. And the vegetables B-complex vitamins, which I mentioned, can help regulate or reduce excessive homocysteine in the body. And homocysteine linked. When we look at blood work, homocysteine is linked to the presence of abnormal inflammation in the body. Now, for those of you who don't know, homocysteine is an amino acid that builds up after a person eats things that are high in it. You know, people, beings, other animals are the only things that produce homocysteine. So when you eat another being, such as, you know, red meat, white meat, you know, fish, any animal protein, this amino acid actually builds up in the body. And when this amino acid is in excess, it increases the risk for coronary artery disease and other cardiovascular issues. So when we get people's blood work in and we say, oh, their homocysteine is high, we know that this person has a great deal of inflammation, and it correlates to things like diabetes, like high cholesterol, like, you know, all of these degenerative diseases as well, because homocysteine to me is just the presence of, you know, not only inflammation, but acid and all, you know, just the body is in a state of degeneration. So we want to make sure that we are eating foods that assist the body in getting rid of inflammation so that we can get to the root cause of these conditions. Now, you probably heard that carrots are good for your eyes, right? And that's because they contain lutein, which is a beta-carotenoid, or a carotenoid. Sorry, not a beta-carotenoid. It is a type of a carotenoid. It's a compound. It's a compound antioxidant that's really good for your eye health. And broccoli is another great way for you to get it. So, again, you don't have to just eat carrots. You can also eat broccoli and get this great nutrient in it as well. Another antioxidant that is rich in broccoli is zeaxanthin. And it's similarly beneficial to the eyes as well. Both of them help with protecting the eyes against macular degeneration, which is a condition that blurs central vision, and it can help prevent cataracts, which is the clouding of the eye lens and is mostly associated with inflammation and excess of glucose in the body that causes that cloudiness. So those things in broccoli are absolutely why it is highly prized, or why it should be highly prized in our diet. As you can see, I love broccoli. I could talk about broccoli for a while. So let's talk about the fiber in broccoli. We only have 5 minutes, so I'm going to just talk about this real quick. The fiber in broccoli, it's a big reason why it's so healthy. Broccoli has nearly 1 gram of fiber per 10 calories, and fiber helps keep you regular, and that helps maintain healthy bacteria levels of the beneficial bacteria in the intestine. Broccoli also aids in digestion by helping to keep your stomach lining healthy. Again, the sulforaphane in broccoli helps keep the stomach bacteria H. pylori from becoming overgrown or clinging so strongly to the stomach wall. And H. pylori is the cause of many different stomach inflammatory disorders, especially ulcers. So if you have ulcers, then it's likely that you have H. pylori, and broccoli is a good way for you to help eradicate it. Broccoli is a great anti-inflammatory food, and it can slow down the damage to joints associated with arthritis. The sulforaphane blocks enzymes that are known to cause joint destruction, stopping some key molecules that are known to kind of trigger that inflammatory process from coming on. The isothiocyanate, I always say this word crazy, isothiocyanates in broccoli, IC3s, they, along with omega-3 fatty acids, also help to regulate inflammation. The flavonoid camphorol also lessens the impact of things like allergens, especially in the intestinal tract, and all of those things are associated with things like arthritis, autoimmune disease, inflammation. So if you eat broccoli, it helps with the immune system being able to handle that a lot better and reduce those symptoms in the body. So as you can see, broccoli is a superfood. You know, it's often slept on, and it's highly underrated, I have to say. Broccoli can be consumed often. You should especially consume it raw or very lightly steamed. But it can also be put in salads. It can be put in stir fries and soups. Don't slather this beautiful vegetable with cheese or butter. It's just wrong. You shouldn't do that. I mean, you can make your, you know, you can make a plant-based cheese sauce, or you can make you could do like coconut oil on it with like some salt and pepper, or like some tahini sauce, or do anything else, but don't slather cheese on it, because it defeats the purpose of broccoli being this anti-inflammatory powerhouse, whereas cheese and butter and things, they're going to just create inflammation and mucus and acid in the body. And you don't want to kind of neutralize the effects of these wonderful foods like broccoli. So that's just, you know, I'm going to get off my soapbox on that one. But, you know, just get a broccoli in, you know, get it in however you like and reap the benefits. Let's see. I only have 3 minutes, and I'm trying to decide which one I want to talk about. Let's talk about cabbage, because cabbage is a little similar to our broccoli friend. Now, the part of the cabbage plant that we eat is actually the undeveloped flower. So it is actually a flower, just that it hasn't blossomed really. And like its cruciferous cousin broccoli, it's chock full of healthful constituents. The fiber in cabbage does a great job of binding together with the bile acids in our digestive tract. And this binding process, when it takes place, is easier for bile acids to be excreted from the body, similar to broccoli, and again results in lower cholesterol levels. Cabbage in general, and it includes the bok choy, napa cabbage, and other varieties of cabbage, they turn out to be a especially good source of sinigrin. And sinigrin is one of the cabbage glucosinolates that receives very special attention by the science community, the research community, in cancer prevention research, because it's shown that sinigrin can be converted to AITC, which is a long isothiocyanate word, And it's basically shown to be a unique cancer preventative, especially when it comes to bladder cancer, colon, as well as prostate cancer. Now, when it comes to red versus green cabbage, that question, I highly recommend the red cabbage. The rich red color of red cabbage reflects its concentration of the pigment, flavonoids, the antioxidants, all the polyphenols that are in it, which contribute to the red cabbage containing significantly more protective phytonutrients than green cabbage. Not saying green cabbage isn't good for you, but, you know, the saying, the black of the berry, the sweet of the juice, well, it's true for cabbages too. So the redder the cabbage, the more nutritious it is. Usually more, the things that are more colorful in nature are going to have the higher nutritional profile. So interest in these anthocyanin pigments continues to intensify because of their many health benefits, because of their antioxidant activity, because of their anti-inflammatory ability. All of these things are why cabbage, and especially red cabbage, are so useful when it comes to healing the body. They help with cell oxidation, they help with cell degeneration, they help prevent it, and people that consume it regularly, even if they have it already going on, it can help with slowing the progression and even in some cases reversing it. Long established in health research, the role of cabbage juice in healing stomach ulcers has also been very touted and has been mentioned in many different medical journals. So again, if you have stomach ulcers, if you have stomach and other digestive difficulties, cabbage juice, which is consuming cabbage, cannot really help with that because, again, it helps with keeping the bacterial colonies in your digestive system healthy and making it to where any unbeneficial bacteria cannot set up shop. So that's my last flower food that I wanted to talk about. Now, I just want to quickly mention ways that you can consume flowers safely. So as lovely and nutritious as eating flowers can be, it can be a little dangerous if you go out looking for some of these flowers in the wild or if you decide to find other flowers to consume. But not to scare you off, you know, just wanting to make sure you're consuming them safely and know that not all flowers in nature are to be consumed. So just follow these tips so that you can eat flowers safely. Just make sure that you eat flowers that you know to be consumable. That's tip number one. Ones that you know you can eat, like broccoli, cabbage, calendula, honeysuckle, dandelion, those kind of things you know, so it should be safe to eat. If you are uncertain, consult a reference book or an expert herbalist before you consume them. Next, eat flowers you have grown yourself or that you know to be safe for consumption. Flowers from the florist or a nursery, something like that, no, don't eat that because most likely they've been treated with pesticides or other chemicals in order to keep, you know, bugs away and weeds and things away. But they're just for looking pretty. They're not for consuming. Now, don't eat roadside flowers or pick those flowers that are in public parks or, you know, things like that because, again, most likely along with the grass, they've been sprayed with pesticides or herbicides, especially if they're on the side of the road. They spray the roads all the time. And a lot of times they may also be polluted by car exhaust that they've been exposed to all day, every day. So you don't want to eat that. That would be horrible. So don't eat those flowers from those areas. Next, eat only the petals and remove pistils and stamens of the flowers before you eat. That can just help you to not get bitter compounds. You know, and it helps with making sure the plant can actually regenerate itself because the pistils and the stamens are the sexual reproductive organs or the reproductive organs of the plant. So, you want to harvest consciously and just get the part of the plant you're going to eat. If you are an allergy sufferer, introduce edible flowers gradually as they may exacerbate your allergies if you don't know particularly this flower may be something I'm allergic to. So just kind of listen to your body in that case. Also, to keep flowers fresh, place them on a moist paper towel and then refrigerate them in an airtight container. Some will last up to 10 days this way if you do it right. Also, if you take ice water and you put that on some limp flowers, like flowers that have, you know, you may be kept out a little too long, you can actually revitalize them by putting some ice water on that paper towel and putting them in that. So other edible flowers that we know to consume are like honeysuckle, lotus, hibiscus. Those are things that we're familiar with. So just be conscious and be, you know, cautious when harvesting wild flowers or new flowers. All right, you guys, so that's pretty much all I have for you today. I hope that was useful. I hope that you were enlightened to some things, either about flowers you didn't know that you were consuming and flowers that you hadn't been introduced to that you can consume now. So go out and eat your medicinal flower foods. Add them to salads, soups, wraps, sandwiches, whatever it is that you like, and be healthy. Now, this is a weekly show, y'all, so catch us next week, same time, same place, new time. 6 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Check out what time that is on your coast, wherever you're at, whether you're East Coast, West Coast, Central, or what have you. And definitely check back with us next week. So, again, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Food for Medicine. I wish everybody a peace and a wonderful weekend of healthfulness and flowers in your food. All right. Peace, everyone.